following audio is from Faith Bible Church in Spokane, Washington. Visit fbchurch.org/sermons for more.
Well, welcome. There's cheesecake and cookies and coffee and water. So if you get bored, you can get up and eat or leave.
I have that same problem at the office.
That's right. food wins out. I'm Walt Takasaki, and thanks for joining. We're going to introduce ourselves a little bit about our background. And, you know, one of the things that really has kind of motivated us to talk about, because we get questions all the time from men in the church, both because we work with college ministry, got a lot of questions from college students, people preparing for future careers, people in the middle of their career. It's like, hey, this is what's happening. What happened? I want to change. What should I do? But I have a family, and here's my expenses. All different ages and dilemmas in work situations change. So we're going to cover actually the first of kind of four sessions that we had planned. In the future, we want to invite other guests because there's some topics about sharing your faith at work where potentially hostile, but there are people in the congregation who work in those situations. There's people who've worked in difficult situations, and so I know Chris in the back is going to be one of our future panelists working through change in occupations. From pastorate to then work environment and then varied work environment. So we want to cover a number of topics over four sessions. Now that we're out of COVID, we're like, all right, let's do it. Let's just have a session. So what we want to do is leave time for Q&A because everybody's work situation is very different. Promise we won't have the answers for you. We might just stare blankly at you and ask and tell you it's a good question. What we want to do is start with kind of a biblical perspective on work and then really take that biblical framework for whatever we're dealing with. It's hard because the Bible speaks on some things about work and occupation, but then what about these other contextual situations that happen in life that happen seemingly all the time? Changes in employers, changes in you name it. Industries changing. So, and then some of you are facing career decisions. How do you do that? And what's a good way of viewing that? So kind of the first session was, you know, we named it, what do I want to be when I grow up? The thing is that changes and can change midlife. So there's not really any age that applies to. And then another session that we wanted to have is money. We call it money. How much do I earn? How much should I earn? How do I earn that much? What if I don't have enough? What if I have too much? And Toby is the money master. He's the he'll tell you about himself in a minute. His Bitcoin strategy. I'll tell you about that. So what you're asking for, Zach? That you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, that's why you're here.
That's right. Yeah. Kind of third session. What about thrashing chaos in your work? And that is common. And I don't know, you know, I've been in the workplace over 40 years and watch industries change rapidly. I do work in tech, so it's constantly changing. But work situations change radically. Industries change radically, which is impactful on work. Your boss can change, and that could go from really good to not so good. So just a number of things. And then the last one, what does it mean to perform in the workplace? What does that look like? How do we as believers perform? What's our requirement? So that's kind of a – and then we may even reshape some of those based on questions or a few things. Those are the things, the questions we get all the time. So anyway, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I'll just tell you, so you're not disappointed, I'm a college dropout, so just not to set expectations too high. I went to school to be an engineer, and I got saved, and God changed my plans, so I dropped out, came back to Spokane, didn't know what I wanted to do, because I had no clue. because people in my family were engineers. I thought, well, that's why I'm going to be an engineer. Found out I did not like it. But God saved me at Washington State University. That was his purpose, to get me down there. But since then, I did go back to school, went to the community college in the electronics program, got a job with Hewlett-Packard, worked there for 17 years, and then I changed, left there after 17 years, went to the company I'm with now for 22 years. So I really only worked in two companies. But I've had about 14 different roles in those two companies. So different opportunities, different responsibilities, mostly it was all had to do with product and the technical side of things. One of the things I'll warn you, never say never about career. I said I was never going to be in sales. That would be the last place. I actually did 7 years in sales and actually ran our sales team. And it was a nightmare to be on the road all the time, yeah. But never say never. So God did some things with that, unique things through that. So currently still at the company, and it's now, we got acquired as a smaller company. We're now part of a global $9 billion giant, and but it's going well. So I'm at the tail end of my career, but had lots of interesting experiences mostly in the tech world, but sales, marketing, product development. So I ran engineering teams and product management. So that's kind of my role now.
I have a very different story than Walt. Went to school actually intending to get a computer science degree. Was supposed to be the first class of computer science graduates from a small private school down in Oregon. Found out that things weren't working out well, and it was going to be another year before their computer science program was done. So I didn't want to go to college for an extra year. So just looked at the options and chose the one that I thought would help provide the best, most stable career environment. So went into accounting and ended up getting my degree in accounting. Moved to Spokane, where my wife is from, really, unlike Walt, kind of bounced around quite a bit through my career. Started doing tax work at a CPA firm, then moved into doing employment audits for the state of Washington, and then moved into working at an accounting role at a bank, then moved into internal audit at a bank, then moved, and actually my longest stint was about 6 years traveling around doing cybersecurity consulting for banks and universities and healthcare organizations. Then from there went back to a bank, then got recruited to a fintech company, and now I've landed back at a bank. So so I have bounced around quite a bit, and I've seen, you know, God's sovereignty through all of it. Each role has led me to be better prepared for the next role. But now I am at Umpqua Bank. I'm a senior vice president, responsible as the information security officer, so cybersecurity, so keeping people's money and their information safe. So that's kind of my track and how I've gotten to where I'm at. So
that's good. The other perspective I have is I have five kids. They're all grown now, all in careers. But helping them through their process of selecting, hey, what should I do with my life and career? So, you know, just real life examples in the home of how do you do that with somebody who really doesn't know what they want to do? And so that's challenging too. Different set of challenges for those who are in the career seeking process. How do you do that? You know, we have that experience of my own kids. And so actually three are mothers now, but they all had different jobs. One was a nurse, one was worked as a consultant, and another one worked in marketing. And but now they're all at home being mothers, but our two sons are in they work for Verizon in the work world. So interesting paths they all took, what God ultimately did in their lives, and just helping, you know, counsel navigate through that. So we can answer any of those questions, and you're on the front end of that.
We are right at the verge of sending one, so there are daily conversations about career that happen at our house.
That's
so
good. Yeah. All right. Well, let me pray. Thanks, Lord, for this night. You are so faithful, not only of our souls, but even provision, work and provision, of which is always on our heart and mind. We live in an expensive culture, and God, it always our hearts have to be shepherded, and then that requires work. So help us have a good perspective from you, what that means, and then even to trust you with all that is in front of us, all that's ahead we can't see, all the uncertainty that you bring our way. Thanks for tonight. Pray that we honor your name, Christ's name. Amen.
Amen.
All right. So I'm going to start for a little bit, and then Toby and I are going to bounce back and forth on some topics. So, and then feel free to just go, hey, what did you mean by that? Or stop us. And if not, at the end, we can even you can even ask questions. So anything is fair game. Those you can give to Toby, the tough questions Toby will answer. So one of the things that about work, and I think this is going to be obvious, but that work is actually divine. It is actually of God. When it says that he created, right, what he created on the seventh day, he rested, but he worked for 6 days. And what did he say at the end of his work? He said it was very good. Wow. So God himself does work. And not only that, but he instituted work in the garden. So that's what he ordained for Adam, to care for the garden. And his edict for Adam and Eve was to work, ordained to care for the earth, subdue it. So from the very beginning, God himself worked, rested. And so he provides that example. He's obviously a creator. So that's one of his attributes in creating. And you could say, well, is that work? Yeah, I think so. It's a form of work to be able to create and ordained for all of us. So within us, we are shaped. We are built to work. Now, what happened to the fall? What's that?
Overtime.
That's right. What?
Painful.
Yeah. So even though work is ordained, that's right. Painful. Thorns and thistles. Sweat, right? I don't know whether that's where sweat glands started to be exercised after the fall, but it kind of says that, I think. So things became difficult. However, just keep in mind, work is ordained of God, and it is part of who we are. He built us, he created us to do that work. So when we think about work, we have to think that context, that God has designed us all for work. What is that work? I can't answer that question for each of you, because I think that's where, actually, we do want to give you some guidance as to how to think about that. But what work he has for each of you individually is varied. So we can talk through that. Number one, provision. So obviously, God made us dependent, right? So every day you do at least 3 times a day have to eat, right? Eat food. And, you know, unless you grow your own food, which would be work, but you have to earn money to purchase that food. So that comes by money. You're going to have to provide financially to sustain eating, shelter, clothing. So that provision is biblical. And, you know, I look at 2 Thessalonians 3:10, you know, if a man will not work, he shall not eat. It's like, that is a refusal of an able-bodied man to work should have the consequence that he lacks food. So, you know, Paul is saying, look, you do need to work and provide for your family. And 1 Timothy 5, but if anyone does not provide for his own family, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Well, that's a pretty strong statement, that provision for your household. And biblically at that time, they were more familial in their living. So their responsibilities were probably broader than today. But regardless, you were worse than an unbeliever. So I was like, oh, wow, that's a pretty strong statement for Christians to go. I am mandated to provide. So those are kind of the principles of work. So another question that comes up, and Toby gets to answer this. What about women in the workplace? Men in the workplace? What about women in the workplace? Context? Help? Squirm.
What's the context of the question?
Should women be providers?
Oh, like within a family? Household. Yeah. So, great question. Thanks for that question. I do think that God ordained men to be the leaders of the household. I think it is good for men to strive to be the provider, the protector. I think that is kind of the God-ordained role. That being said, I know that there are circumstances in life and times where a woman in the workforce may make sense or may be necessary, whether it's something happens to the husband, either he can't find work or there's health issues or a lot of different reasons why a wife may or a woman may need to step into the workforce and help with income, because you do, especially in a family situation, you do have a need to provide for a family. There are instances where, just practically speaking, a husband may not be able to be the main provider. So I think that's one thing that's just a reality of the world that we live in, is in an ideal state, the husband is the provider and the leader of the family. There are always circumstances that are outside of the ideal state where that may make sense and may be appropriate as well. I know that we get a lot of questions. We've gotten a lot of questions in the finance classes over the years about both spouses working, and I think that is a decision that that a couple has to make around how they want to run their household. I would say to that a lot of the decisions that would occur and kind of be precursors to that. Oftentimes, what we see is a need for a wife to also work a second job. Sometimes it's because they have a desire to be involved, to have connection to work. But we often also see fairly frequently where there's a financial need for that. And oftentimes, we see that there are decisions that led up to that need that. Obviously should be considered, and sometimes earlier on those decisions can help lead to a circumstance where it's not a necessity, where it may be a desire and it may work great for a family, but oftentimes we just see financial decisions that lead to that being end up being something that it's considered necessary in a household. I don't know if that answers your question, but just some thoughts on it.
So can I say what you just said less diplomatically?
Sure.
Is that okay? And sometimes in your financial, the management class, people can make decisions either knowingly or unknowingly that put themselves maybe in heavy debt or expenses that are ongoing, decisions of what they think maybe is a lifestyle or things to own, that then you have to make those payments, and consequently then the cascading result is got to work to pay these. So
that's a good way to say it, and thank you for the summary. And we're not immune from it as well. I mean, Jen and I, we had a very thought out plan of how we were going to have kids, and she worked at the time, and we made a financial decision, a house decision, under expectations of when we would have kids, the timing of children. It did not work out the way we had planned, and so it definitely caused a shift in our financial capabilities at the time. She was able to stop work, but it was ramen and hot dogs for a couple of years to squeeze by. So so those houses, cars, there are a lot of different decisions that that if they're made under certain kind of presuppositions, they can lead to the need for both spouses to work. So,
okay. Yeah. Have you seen people get out of those situations?
We have. I mean, there are always options. There are always options. Most of the time there are options. Not always options that are fun and enjoyable. It may mean that you have to sell the house that you love and move into something smaller or an apartment. I know in today's culture that's kind of a unheard of to downgrade a lifestyle like that. But those are options that can happen. We've seen people work, husband work a second job or look for different work, maybe work that's not as enjoyable or, in a career that they love and enjoy, but there may be more overtime or higher pay. So there are oftentimes adjustments that can be made. It just really comes down to a commitment to what you want your household to look like. So
that's good. Okay. Question.
To me, that called me to say, well, I want to work is a vocation. I use the talent, whatever that is, to serve the people that I work with each day. So I see, that's, kind of how I go in work is I'm serving the Lord regardless. And who I work for, who's my boss, or what title or what job that I do, or could be just picking up, the garbage in the meeting room. But if we have the heart to serve God, that is what it means to me.
That's good. Yep. Thanks, Madeline. And I think that's the other aspect of we want to answer a question which we've gotten is, are there any careers that believers should pursue, or should it just be full time ministry? Is that the only career that is noble and honorable before the Lord? So, but are there any careers that or work directions that believers should avoid? Toby,
that question.
I'll chime in too.
When do I get to ask the questions? I would say, generally speaking, most careers are not anti-biblical. I mean, I think we could all think of a few that I would highly recommend that no believer would want to dive into. But generally speaking, even those career tracks that may seem like they don't have any direct spiritual ties or opportunity, I think there's always the knowledge and experience that you gain at work and the positions that of understanding that you gain at work. I think it is very rare for there not to ever be an opportunity for you to use that for biblical purposes, whether that's help or assistance or the building up of the body here at church. I mean, there are always practical needs of the people here at church. And whether you're an accountant that can help somebody with their taxes, which is one of the side things that I do, or a mechanic that can help fix up a car for somebody, a single mom that can't afford it. Just about any career track that you take, there's likely going to be some opportunity, especially if you pursue and look for opportunities to be able to use that knowledge, that skill, that expertise in order to be able to support the body of the church. But then also every career is also an opportunity to show who you are as a believer to those around you. So you don't have to be a pastor in order to be able to speak and show Christ's love to those around you. So I wouldn't say that there are, I wouldn't point people away from many career tracks, maybe a few that we don't want to discuss here. But generally speaking, I believe just about any career track can be used for eternal purposes if you really approach it that way and if you look for opportunities to use either your skills or the workplace for biblical purposes. So
that's good. One of the perspectives, and some of you are maybe closer involved with ministries, with missions. So we like to support missions and global outreach. The team is called the Global Outreach Team. And guess what that requires? That requires money to send people internationally to support them. And it's getting more and more expensive. So that's one of the things the Global Outreach Team is wrestling through, what it costs to send people international. But the really perspective, a kind of a line that you can draw is either be sent or send. Be sent or send. So be a sender or be sent. Well, if you're here, then you are considered a sender, right? If you're part of Faith Bible Church, because if you are giving on a regular basis, that part of your giving is going to global missions. And that outreach is based on your income that you, God has led you to give a portion of that to the church, and that goes for international missions. It goes for local outreach as well. So understand that, as Toby said, you know, where you think, oh, well, I'm just giving to keep the lights on, and no, there's a lot more ministry going on by the giving. And I don't know, do you guys look at the FBC weekly giving? Do you look at that number every week? It's at the very bottom. Used to be in the bulletin. It's continually, surprisingly, always over budget. The people at FBC are so generous, and it's really encouraging that they are senders to the ministry here at this facility, but worldwide, and enabling the seminary, who people are going to be sent, enabling the seminary to be on site, pastors being trained. By the way, the first graduating class is happening in May, for the very first seminary grad class for the seminary here. So those are things facilitated by keeping the lights, having the media connections, the staffing. All those things are being enabled by faithful giving of the people at FBC. So when it comes to are the things that we do helpful? Absolutely. And work provision allows you to do that. And I think that's a gracious gift from God, that's how he carries on his work, his forgiving. I think the other thing is that, like Toby was saying, that there are definitely some things probably to avoid that would not be good for a believer to participate in a work environment. What's that?
Piracy.
That's right. That's right. And Toby could speak on that. Cybersecurity could speak on that all day long. But there are careers that probably on the edge of where you go, you know, I think this is crossing the line between where it says for believers, all things are lawful. Well, all things that aren't sin are lawful. But it says, but not all things are profitable or helpful. So that's one of the determinations between you and the Lord. What things would not be beneficial for my heart, my soul, to participate in? It might violate my conscience even, or other people might look at me and go, you know, that seems like on the edge of, you know, I'm not sure that's really honoring the Lord. But again, those are grayer areas that you're going to have to decide. Probably is not helpful, beneficial. That word is that word is kind of a broader, but it's like not good, not a good thing to participate in. So, just in terms of career direction decision, probably an area to really contemplate, meditate. For people, and there's some younger people here who are seeking, or even a career change, what would you recommend, Toby? And I'll answer part two. For people who are trying to decide career direction or career change, what is a method for doing that biblically? I think as a believer.
Yeah. So when I think like career change or career track, biblically speaking, there are a lot of kind of intersections with practicalities as well. I mean, some of the things you want to consider is the mandate to provide. So as you look at a career change, is that career going to be able to help me fulfill the mandate to provide for my family? Is it going to even potentially create the opportunity for me to be generous with what I've been given, whether that's missions or just having the opportunity to be able to fund needs within the church or outside the church? So that is something to be considered. Not that finances are the and money is the driving factor for everything, but it is a reality in this world. I mean, it does. It is kind of what makes the world go round, and we live in a world that requires funds to be able to do that. And even things like missions require funds to make those things happen. So money is not evil in that. So evaluating the earning potential, both in the short term and in the long term as well, is really important to consider. The impact on family, I think, is very important as well, because I have had career changes where it had significant impacts on my ability to be able to be the father and the husband that I needed to be, and not necessarily in a good way. So, like, mine was around travel. My job required a ton of travel, leaving Sunday evening almost every week and then getting back on Thursday or Friday almost every week all year long. So it was taxing on Jen. It was taxing on the kids. And so the potential impacts to availability to the family, potential impacts to ability to serve and minister as well, are all things that are important considerations. The type of environment that it would put you in, as you mentioned, there are some career tracks or career choices that would potentially put you into a career or a work environment that might either challenge you, either because of personal challenges that you have, or just generally speaking, may put you in an environment that you know is going to be difficult to be able to maintain upright work and living, but just because of the environment that you're putting yourself into. So I think those are a lot of, they have both practical implications, but are also based on biblical principles that need to be considered as well. So, and then, I mean, kind of on the outside of that as well is seeking wisdom from those who can think biblically and love you enough to tell you if you're going to make a stupid decision. So that's not necessarily an underlying principle, but I think any career change or career track, it's good to go speak to somebody who can listen to what you're thinking and tell you if you're letting your emotions or your desires steer you in a direction that are not a direction you should be going. So,
good question.
Yep.
I've heard a lot about work-life balance, and I think that's especially important for people in the church with families, and that our work and our career doesn't become our identity and kind of supersede our identity in Christ. So how do you guys, how would you suggest finding that balance to understand that this is what I spend, 40-plus hours a week doing, but it's not who I am? At what point does that start becoming more of an idol and something you might need to back away from?
Yeah. You read my notes. That's what was next. Yeah.
That's a good question.
No, it's a good question. The I think, as you all know, you live in America. We live in America. It is not cheap to live in America. I don't even know what poverty level is these days. You may know. I think it's around 28,000, 30,000, somewhere around there, something like that. And here's a finance guy, but we do a lot of premarital counseling, budgets, and in really helping couples plan for their finances. At a bare minimum, when a couple gets married, and a lot of times people aren't aware because you know guys have lived with five guys in a house and they've shared expenses. They don't buy any clothes. They don't buy any presents. They don't buy any.
No, sir.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. They're like, I live on nothing. Like, that's right. It's like, that's right. And it's like, oh, well. You know, I think just minimum budgets, you know, are in the $35,000 for just no savings. No, you're not planning ahead, so it's not cheap to live in America, paying for car insurance, paying for cars because we don't have mass transit, on and on and on. It's very demanding. Finances are very demanding. So, consequently, compensation for a job is very important. When it comes to the demands, which is balancing, I need to provide because biblically God says I need to provide for my family. But how do I balance that other side of work? So here's an interesting perspective, and I think depending on circles you run in, you might go, well, here's the kind of the hierarchy in my life is God first. You know, my relationship with God first, my relationship, if you're married, with my wife, then my relationship with my kids, then my church, and then my work. And like, it's kind of a hierarchy thinking. I think of it in a different way, and I think we are not compartmentalized. While you might want to do that, God has redeemed all of us. All of us, our whole person, which means that he's redeemed me in my marriage, in my work, in what I do, how I work with my kids, that I'm responsible, equally responsible for my marriage and my kids as I am for work. So I guess I view us as a whole person, not in compartments that they're hierarchical. So what does that mean? Well, that means that to what Toby was saying earlier, and I've done the same thing, where work took too much for me. And I had to, I put myself in a situation where I traveled, just like Toby, and it was very demanding. So I was gone. I wasn't gone that much, but I was gone. And it took a toll on my family. And I realized, you know, this is not healthy. And my responsibilities as a husband and a father were neglected, and my family paid a price. So, paid a heavy price for a period of time. And you know, I had to repent and back off and take on more responsibility because I'm not shy. And Pam, we are not shy about saying this. I put her into depression. A physiological depression, and it breaks my heart because I did it. It was a 2-year period. She got out of it, but it was because I put too much responsibility on her. I did not balance my work and my life, my responsibility for the Lord. So we are not speaking as experts. We're speaking as those who have fallen in this ditch, and we're recommending you not drive. You drive in the road, not in the ditch. So, and as I'm sure you could speak to, but how to balance that? It is, you can make mistakes and error and think, oh, this is great. Oh, they all, and part of it is sometimes an allure of who you are and people demanding of you and going, you're the only guy that can do this or you're perfect. Please, there's nobody else. and you're the best, you're smart, or capable, or handsome, or beautiful, whatever. I don't know what they're going to say to you.
I never got that.
I thought, all of them?
No.
you can make mistakes, but they are, you can recover before the Lord. But it is all the responsibility all at once. That is, it's hard to accept. I don't know. For me, it was hard to accept. I own all of this, balancing all of it. I own that. Not, oh, well, I'll just go do this, and we'll let everything else take care of itself. It didn't. It didn't take care of itself. It crashed. So, anyway.
I think one of the, to your question, one of the ways to balance it, which I did not do, is to be transparent and open with the people around you that you trust that can tell you, whether it's a spouse that can say, yeah, I'm having a hard time doing this, or look at the kids, like, look what's happening to the kids because you're gone so much. So, and others, you should have others in your life that are able to speak into your life that way, that are willing to tell you, like, it's too much. Like, we can see the implications in your life. So you need people that are to be transparent and to be willing to hear that from other people, because the allure is there. I never was told I was handsome or beautiful, but part of the draw was I felt important. I was being asked to speak at 10, 12 conferences, big conferences. I felt like I was important and valued, but that's not where I should be finding my value. I mean, my value should be in the church and in the home, but I really enjoyed feeling like I was important, like I was a bigwig out there, and people wanted to hear from me because I was an expert. And it made me kind of set aside what I knew was happening at home, until it finally got to the point where it just kind of was, couldn't avoid it anymore. So
yeah, great question. It's a constant battle, because families change. Right, when you have little ones, as you know, we see they are. It takes a lot of time, takes a lot of energy, and telling myself again, you know, I don't know how many times that we'd be having a time as a family, and you know, we'd all be sitting there, and whether you know, talking or doing something, and you know, and I'm there, but Pam's like, hey, Walt, what are you thinking? I'm like, guess where I am? I'm at work. you know, it's like, you know, are you listening? Are you hearing anything? I'm like, you know, so just because I'm not at work doesn't mean I'm not working. And that really was another part of, I need to be present in my home too. So it's hard to be not distracted, but to go, you know, I am responsible for balancing, if you will call it, but I'm responsible for it all. It's not even necessarily, maybe it is balancing, even that's a funny word, but I'm just responsible for it all. So it's a little bit different perspective, encouragement, that before the Lord, he redeemed all of us. He redeemed us as a person, every part of us. Our work, our home life, our marriage, all that's under his auspices, under his guidance, under his leadership. So anyway, helpful perspective for guys who've driven in the ditch and recommend you not go there. But yeah, that's a great question. The other thing in kind of career direction, I think Toby referred to it. We recommend that if you're going to do something different, let's say, or I don't know what to do, I don't know where to go, recommendation is what I would call job shadow. Or just talk to people who are doing that vocation, doing that area that you're interested in. What did it take to get there? What does it take to do the work? And not just talk to one person. Try to talk to several people and find out what is the reality? What is the day in the life of what do you do? What is it like? And to talk to varied people, you'll find out that, oh, this is where the grass is green, but this is where the grass is brown. And it give you a better perspective on choosing a career direction. But what's very difficult when you're young, trying to choose a direction, is you don't know how God has wired you, how God has put you together. And I've seen people who have said, I want to be this. I want to be an engineer. Me. So I did an engineering internship. I was in school. And after doing the internship, I'm like, this is not what I want to do. I was like, this stinks. I don't really want to sit here and, you know, design stuff all day long. That's really not me. I'm interested in it, but it's not what I want to do. So, but I didn't know, you know, until I just kind of started. I didn't have any guidance from anybody. I just started. I wasn't a believer. Wasn't a believer. So it was interesting to go down that route without any help.
I would, to the career choice piece, to maybe circle back a little bit to, especially to the early stages of career choice, because we haven't really talked about that too much. I think there are a lot of things that should be considered and evaluated when you're deciding, especially when you're young, like Walt said, you don't necessarily know what you want to do, what you're going to enjoy. I don't know. A lot of people disagree with me. I'm not one to say, I think you need to, there's the old adage, like find what you love and then figure out how to make it a career. I've always approached it. God wired me to be a provider when I was young. My mom tells me a story of like my sophomore year in high school. I came to her and said, Mom, I've run the numbers and I have no idea how I'm going to support a family someday. So I'm kind of weird that way. But I've always approached it as I don't necessarily need to do a job that I love. I just need to be able to do a job that is going to be able to support a family if that's what God has put in my life. So I would say early in the career track, really analyze, yes, it's good to do something that you like or something that you love if that works out. But really thinking through the practicalities of choosing a career, do some legwork instead of just saying, I want to be a whatever it is. Do some legwork. Find out. Like Walt said, talk to people who do that job and find out what does that look like? Because many people don't really understand what a job looks like. They hear engineer and they think one thing, or they hear accountant and they think one thing. But like in accounting or in my work now, security, there are 50 different types of work that you can do within the accounting world. You can be an auditor. You can be a tax person. You can do financial statements. You can be a forensic accountant. So there's a lot of different things. So understand what that looks like from people that know it, and then do some of the number work. Find out what kind of income do they make? What are the different options? What kind of income do they make? What kind of degree do you need? What kind of cost is it to get yourself initiated into that career? Because a degree is good, but sometimes there's additional certifications or you need an advanced degree to be able to be successful. So do the legwork to find out what does it really take to get into this career? What does it look like when you're in that career? Both what does the work look like and what is your earnings like? Because I will say you may have a job that you really love, but if it doesn't make any money, if the earning potential is just not there, life is going to be difficult. We see many people who have gone into a lot of student loan debt to get into a career that has very low earning potential, very low earnings. And so they may love the work that they do, but they are in a very difficult situation because they're buried in debt. They can't really make any financial or strategic decisions for their family because they're so burdened by the financial position that they put themselves into. They've eliminated the ability to make any choices, whether it's how many hours they work or how involved they can be, because they've kind of locked themselves into it. So I think it is important to think through the practicalities of the career, find out what that career really looks like, what kind of earning potential there is there. Not that you have to go for the highest earning job that's out there, but make sure that at least that role is going to be able to provide, if you want a family, for a family, so that you put yourself in a situation where you can make, do I want to be involved in ministry? Do I want to not necessarily work 60 hours a week? Because a lot of careers, you know that it's built in. Like in public accounting, if you go into public accounting, you know you're going to be working 60 hours a week. If you go into taxes during, from January through April, you're going to be working 70, 80 hours a week. So there are some things that are known, and it's good to understand that before you go in so that you can make a wise choice.
Here's just a recommendation for anyone at any stage in life, whether you're beginning, so the job shadow, getting counsel, but even as people are progressing in their work, whatever, however old you are, I would highly recommend if you have somebody. We are an interesting church because, as you've heard our statement continually, we want to be a loving community making disciples of Jesus Christ. Well, discipleship for us cuts across all of life. It's not just here's what Scripture says about this sin issue or about but also providing counsel of like, hey, my boss is this, or my work looks like this, and this is, I'm stuck. We have people who help with all the life, all people's lives, to just go, do you have any ideas and thoughts? Because work situations change on a regular basis, and it is great to get counsel from people that you trust, and those are typically people in the church who have really good motives and are going to ask you really good questions and dive in and help. So, and that's why, having worked with a lot of college students for years, I still get phone calls from people who are now have graduated. They're well into their work world. Just got a call this weekend. Hey, got this job opportunity, and this is what it is, and describing, and he goes, I just want to run it by you because you provided this help all along. And provided my perspective. And he's like, okay, good. I just wanted to hear it. And it's like, that's kind of what I was going to say, but I just wanted to hear it from you. I'm like, okay, well, I knew he knew, but all along in your life, really seeking out counsel and wisdom and help, I think is just helpful for our own soul. Somebody to pray for you, say, let's pray about it. And here's some thoughts. Here's some other people to talk to about it. I'd recommend you go talk to this person or these three people. Has been, I think a really valuable mindset rather than, well, I'm just doing what I'm doing and I'll just go find something else and I'm just going to find my own way. Just not recommending that. So it's I think the other thing, one of the things about being a believer and trying to choose career direction, a career choice, a company to work for, one of the things that you cannot see, because we are not prophetic, we do not have that insight. We have no idea what it's really going to be versus what we planned, right? How many times do we think, oh, this is what I think it is, and it turns out totally different, and you're like, oh, man. One of the things that I've done for a number of years is continue to pray for God to protect me, one, from myself, because as Toby and I have seen, our hearts can be deceitful above all else, and we can lead ourselves and justify anything, right? We can all very clever justify anything, and we're really good at it, that argument and winning the argument. So one, protect me from myself. Two, protect me from all that I cannot see. Because I cannot see the future. I cannot see into situations where I've never been. And, I've looked at other career changes in the past when I thought, because I work in the tech industry and it go up and down and you can lose your job, everybody can go out of business. And I've seen that year after year after year. Billion-dollar companies disappear, and you see it all the time, and thinking, oh, that's going to happen. I'm going to change careers. And so I've interviewed for several companies and go, wow, this looks like a great company. Look what all they're doing. Got turned down. I've never been turned down. Those are the first times I've been turned down, in all my job seeking. So it's kind of like, whoa. But you know what? I went into it with a different attitude. God, protect me from what I cannot see, because everything I see on the surface looks wonderful, shiny, and glorious. And then later on, guess what? What I found out, that it wasn't. It's like somebody else worked at the company and said, oh, yeah, you should be thankful you didn't get that job because here's what happened. And I'm like, wow, thank you, Lord, for protecting me from what I cannot see, because we need to always trust the Lord. So, one of the big things in that I advocate. And I don't know how many of you have a prayer list, but I would strongly advocate that you, if you don't have a prayer list, an ongoing prayer list, that you put this on a prayer list. Because provision is a key part. It's ordained by God. It's a key part of who we are. So it really should have prayer. Just like your family, church, your own soul. Those should be items of prayer to really pray. God, please, this is what I cannot see and what I need to trust you in. What I want to do is kind of Matthew 6. I don't know if you have a Bible, but just want to take you there, 6:25. Through 34. Okay, who has a loud voice and wants to read? Read 6:25 through 34. Thanks, Joe. Oh, okay. All right. David.
Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I tell you, even Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble.
Great. You know, these are overriding principles, scriptural principles that need to dominate our hearts, our thinking in all of this, right? It's career and provision, career direction change, industry change, things that get visited upon an industry outside of your control, outside of your plans. Has anybody ever been impacted by industry changes, market changes, layoffs? Yeah. Tremendous changes that come upon us, where some industries in the past have been immune, right? Where all the money was being made. Not anymore. You see that rapidly changing. And the reality is, with God, what we're to seek first is his kingdom. It's like, man, when we feel anxious about, you know, this topic that we're talking about, it's challenging. So how ask you another hard question. How do we manage trusting God with this, seeking his kingdom first, yet at the same time going, I got to provide. I have to earn an income. How do you do that?
I think it comes down, as I think almost everything in Scripture does, to the heart. I think we can trust in God for in his sovereignty. I mean, I think and it's kind of funny because I often talk to people that are talking about big financial or career changes about the difference between academically believing in God's sovereignty and then like genuinely having that kind of rest inside your soul. And I think when you genuinely, not just academically, but genuinely trust in God's sovereignty, the anxiousness, the anxiety, and there are things in life that happen that our physical human natures will cause us to be anxious. But when that lingers, when it when it overrides the kind of the biblical mandates and approaches to that, I think that's when it should give us alarm. I think we can trust that, but yet trusting in God's sovereignty doesn't mean that we don't take seriously the responsibilities that we've been given in Scripture. It's like I genuinely trust in God's sovereignty in all aspects of my life, and yet I wear a seatbelt because that's a smart thing to do. So when it...
Home insurance, too.
Nice. So I think you can trust in him, but then genuinely take steps to be responsible with what we've called to do, which means I trust God in my career. I know that he will provide for me, whether it's through my career or by some other means. And yet that doesn't mean that I don't need to proactively be thinking through how can I continue to be a good worker? How can I continue to advance my career? How can I continue to network with other people that if something does happen with my career will make it easier for me to have the opportunity to find another job? So there are lots of things that we can do on a day-to-day basis that are just being responsible with the mandates we've been given to provide, yet those don't erode the trust in God's sovereignty. I think as a guy, one thing I have to personally be careful of is that need to practically be preparing for and managing my career doesn't become a self-sufficiency, where I think that's where I can tend to go is, if I'm a hard worker and I get these certifications and I make sure my LinkedIn account is phenomenal and I have 3,000 connections on LinkedIn, then I don't need to worry about it because I've set myself up to be able to get another job. And the reality is I can't do anything in my own power that guarantees that my career will be successful because God is sovereign over all those things. But I think sometimes it's easy to think, you know, I've done a good job, I've arrived, so I have essentially created an environment in which I will be able to stay gainfully employed. And I think we have to be careful of that because that's going, that's leaning into the responsibility so much that we start to lose the sovereignty. And I think we need to have both. We need to be responsible in what we do, but also making sure that we don't think and never make assumptions that that our job is safe, our financial earnings are safe, any of that, because that's just genuinely, it could all be gone tomorrow. I mean, the stock market could be cleared out. My company could go under. I could be terminated. So there's nothing that I should hold on tightly to because there are no guarantees for tomorrow other than that God will provide for me in some way, in some means. So I think it's important to remember that while still taking the steps that we can to be responsible and making sure that we do try to be providers. So, long-winded response.
No, that's good. Okay, you have an opportunity to ask us questions. And if you're tired of us, you can just have cheesecake and coffee and go. So, any questions? Burning questions. Yep.
I work with a lot of people that are just getting started out on their career path. Or people that they've just got that good job and they're just charging in, trying to do the best they can. What are top tips for somebody to go from that, okay, I'm out in the workforce, now what do I do to be in provision instead of going and blowing a bunch of cash on a sweet ride? What would be your top advice for somebody young in the field? Do this sooner than later. Get on those, think about this.
Sure. So somebody who's jumped into a career, got that first really good job, one of the first things I would warn against is don't let that become your identity. It's easy when you get a really good job or a really good new job to at some level start to allow yourself to that is who you are. I think it's important to understand that our careers are important for providing. But we have to fight that tendency to allow that to be our identity. And that's a very easy trap to fall into. I mean, as guys, that's probably most commonly the first question we ask somebody that we meet is, what do you do? And so it's very easy for us in our culture to think that what we do defines who we are. And we have to make sure that that's not the case. So early in a career, it's good to be excited about a new job, to be excited about being a hard worker, but don't let that become your identity. And then also maintain that balance of working hard, but also making sure that you don't tune out everything else in life, especially the other biblical mandates that we have to be fellowshipping with others, to be sharing the gospel, to be lovers and lovers of all of those around us, to make sure that we don't get consumed in the excitement of that new job to the point where we start to allow ourselves to set aside what may have been priorities in our life beforehand. Practically speaking, in a new job, learn who the key people are around you and learn from them about how to be successful in that role, what some of the pitfalls are in that role. Most new jobs are there because somebody left that job, so oftentimes it's good to find out kind of what the circumstances are that you're walking into, and then just learn from people around you how to be successful in that role and be humble. That's another pitfall, is coming into a new job thinking you're a hot shot and causing everybody around you to not want to work with you because you're the arrogant new person in the role. So trying to stay humble and learn from those around you. Even as you move yourself up the ladder, that's always important, is to be a humble leader. So
there is a interesting, and it's kind of the joke about the new millennials that are entering the workforce, and what you see their attitude and mindset of what when they show up, and very interesting how the generation that's now in the just entering the workforce, what they've been taught to think like, and their perspectives on themselves, their overinflated perspectives on themselves that they've been told their whole lives, and the expectation to work hard. It's like just incongruent with what they've been told.
Yeah. I've actually had one of my one of the employees in my group, a new young. I don't know if they're a millennial, but I would probably classify them as that, come to me and say, do we really have to work a full 40 hours a week? And I was like, well, yes. Yes, you do have to work a full 40.
And when do I get the six-figure salary? Right.
Well, and that's, I also have had multiple employees who just started in an entry-level role come to me asking about how to get promoted to a senior manager role or something like that, and I'm like I love the eagerness there, but you're about 10 years from a senior manager role. So being realistic and understanding and knowing that you have to work your way, you have to work your way into positions and earn the respect of those around you if you want to advance. So that is an interesting thing that we deal with nowadays. I personally hire the individual. Like Jen's heard me talk about this a lot. Like I feel like I can teach the right person the skills that they need to be successful in the job, but finding somebody who's a hard worker and gets along with other people is hard to find nowadays, especially those younger kids, because they just don't want to work. They want to be paid a lot and they don't want to have to work. So don't do that.
Yeah,
in terms of that mandate to provide, how important is the possibility of growth? Say that you have a job you're very comfortable in and feel very capable at, but there's not a really anywhere else to go. Is that a company that then you should probably just look for something else because your costs of living are probably going to rise and they're not going to be able to compensate? Or is that something that you can stick to because it's meeting your needs now and you don't really necessarily have to have that next step?
I would say it's all about context, about where you're at in your career and in your life. There are times where you may be in a job where there's not a lot of growth or potential growth opportunity, but you may be in a point in life where stability is critical. Like with young kids, like if I know that this job is stable, the likelihood of me getting fired is low, it's manageable, so I'm able to work-life balance, then it may be a perfect fit for you, even though there's not a lot of advancement. Other places in your career, in your life, you may say, I've encouraged people, hey, if you're in a dead end and you're in a position where you really have a desire to advance, then I've shifted jobs before because I was where I was at, there was no opportunity for growth. And I was in a place where I wanted growth and desired what came along with the growth. So I think a lot of it is context for me.
Yeah. And we are, that is our next seminar topic, going into that question in detail, because it is a difficult question of, and the, as Toby said, life can change, particularly when you have a young family, but then as expenses grow over time, the reality of, ooh, income doesn't equal expenditures, even as hard as you, as thrifty as you are, as frugal, as careful. So we can talk through in detail, and partly why, a little more detail, Toby and Jenny do the financial management class here, but they also provide individual counseling. They've been through how many people's finances?
A lot.
A lot. So really helping understand and give you a perspective. You could seek them out. They're confidential people. They're not going to have you on the radio making fun of you for making stupid decisions and public across the internet.
We're not that guy.
Not that people. So, but yes. We can share even our own family, 5 kids. Pam did not work outside the home. I think she worked harder than I did, but in the home, but share kind of what we did as well. But it was challenging. So it was very challenging. We can walk through that. So, Aaron.
On the topic of providing life insurance, is that an important thing? Important thing.
Yes. Again, context. If you're a young single, life insurance is not as important. Not that you're not important, but the purpose of life...
Oh, you are important, Aaron. You are important.
I mean, the purpose of life insurance is really, if something happens to you, to make sure that the necessities around that are taken care of. So... As a single, even an old single, I guess, you have to evaluate again context. If something was to happen to me, are there needs, or is there a way to love those around me by making sure that my death is not going to be a financial burden on others? So, as a married or with a family, absolutely, I think that is one of the greatest ways you can love your family, is making sure that if something happens to you, that there's not a financial crisis that's also tied into the emotional crisis that comes along with the death. So to me, life insurance is critical. It's usually not tremendously expensive, and it's a great way to show love to others by making sure that that the finances don't become an issue. So, and everybody's important, no matter...
Millennials, no matter your age, millennials are especially important.
Yeah. Is that one of our sessions, or is that?
That's going to be covered in one of our sessions. So yeah, it is. It's a good question, and virtual is definitely difficult. Just like church virtually, you know, is it really church? The best we could, definitely in person is definitely. Although, being said, I've had the opportunity. I only met this person. He got newly hired at our company. Virtually, I've only met him virtually, don't know where he's at with Christ, but he has spiritual interest, and we've had a lot of conversations just because, I kind of told him what my life consisted of outside my work, and he actually contacted me again and said, I want to hear about this. I want to know more about this, and we've consequently had more conversations about Christ, and it's been, again... He might be a baby believer, but I'm really, it's, again, we've had 2 conversations, but he's been the one to pursue me because of just his spiritual interest. So it's not impossible. And again, I've never even met him face to face. So he lives in North Carolina.
Yeah. No. And I don't want to spoil too much because you'll have to come back for the sessions. But I think as you've probably already seen, my standard answer is context. And we'll go through that. I mean, it's different, you know, with me and my role, it's very different what I can do with somebody that's reporting to me versus what the conversations I can have with my boss above me or those that work around me. So in the corporate world, there are definitely, one, you have to understand your corporate culture, but secondly, just the influence that you have, they're different. You just have to be careful depending on how it goes, and we'll go into more detail on all of that. Because I have to be careful that I don't make people that report to me feel like I'm, you know, applying pressure to them, whereas I have much more freedom to speak to my boss because obviously I can't create any pressure against him because he holds my job in his hands. So it's definitely different how that goes, but we'll go into more detail.
Good. Good questions. All types of questions.
When it comes to traveling, I'm curious what you guys' perspective is on that now that you have both gone down that road. What would you consider too much traveling? Again, I'm sure there's a context answer
to go along. He's got it.
But it's my career is somewhat specialized. There's not a lot of movement in that, or the movement that I maybe want to go, I don't really want to go. And so the only other option for me to stay here is to partially commute back and forth to Seattle on occasion. Mm-hmm. And I don't exactly know what that looks like. You know, teleworking is becoming much more prevalent and much more possible, but we don't know what the future is going to look like. And so we're just kind of in a position where we're just trying to evaluate, like, all right, what I'm in right now is, it presents its set of challenges. And so it's kind of like, okay, the next movement for me would be to do this, but at the same time, I don't...
Be careful, yeah.
I question me going back and forth, you know, even if it's a couple days a week or something like that. So.
You know, because Kobe and I have traveled off and on, I've traveled a lot, I've traveled a little, it is a context, is partly dependent if you have family, if you have kids. It is dependent on their ages and what kind of demands there are in the home. Some people have heavier demands depending on again, the age or even the personalities of your children. So that's part of it dependent. Definitely clock time away. The more you are away, you're just not present. And that's not healthy. So I think you need to, it could be something you go, so this is the other thing I've done career-wise. I've actually set hard limits for myself, boundaries. I will not go beyond this point. So if it exceeds that, I'm done. I will resign. I will seek something else out. So part of it is really praying that a job does not become my, that I am subservient to it, that I am serving the Lord, not my job. And that is a hard choice, because if you get accolades, income, you know, all sorts of things from your role, it's hard to say, I'm not going to work on a regular basis 55 hours a week because I have a young family. That is the limit, or 50 hours a week, or whatever you choose as a boundary, depending on needs of your situation. And that's what's hard to do, to set some hard rules for yourself. That's, again, protecting yourself from yourself in some ways, so that not saying you wouldn't, as you drew that line, jump over it every once in a while and go, okay, I drew that line in the sand, but, you know, I kind of ran past it. But the recognition is too far past is a minefield. You don't want to go there. So, you know, I think that's something you have to be aware of, and really, if you're married, talk through with your spouse. Sometimes some personalities are more capable. However, I made that mistake assuming my wife was stronger than she was, because she's strong. She's a redhead. She's got fire. However, a sustained amount of stress on her was not healthy. And so you really have to continuously evaluate the situation. You may go, you know, let's try this for a while. And this is a hard limit. Won't do this any more than this. And if it's not working, I will commit to exit or change. So that's just a kind of a perspective. Good question, though. David?
Career changes can be costly, especially if they involve going back to school. What are some tipping points that might make it worth it? I'll explain a little bit of that context.
Yeah, so a career change, it can be costly, especially if it does require additional education or certifications. I think that comes somewhat back to what I said before, is really counting the cost. So there's the very clear cost of what would the education cost me to go back to school or to get the required certifications. Like if you want to become a CPA, there's pretty measurable dollar amounts that are associated with those things. But then I think also you have to evaluate some of the maybe less clear, the less obvious things, and that may be, will there be earning impacts? You know, if you have to go back to school, can you still work full time? So are your earnings going to dip for a time? And what are the implications of that? And then the long term earning potential for the career that you're looking to go into. Because it's one thing to say, if I go back to school and get my accounting degree, you know, the average accountant makes, you know, whatever, $75,000 a year. But understanding the different branches of accounting and what is the long-term earning potential? Because some careers pay well, but they don't necessarily, the long-term earning potential isn't necessarily there. Whereas other careers you may start out at less, but then there may be a lot more earning potential over time, depending on the track that you take. So it really comes down to counting the cost and doing the work to understand the implications of that financially. I mean, there's all kinds of personal and time and ministry related implications to a career change, but just speaking kind of practically, just really measuring and making sure that you really understand what that career change is going to cost, both dollar wise and what the long term trajectory is of it. I think that's what I would counsel somebody to really take into consideration. And then the fit with where you want to go in life. I mean, that's less of the numbers, but you know, is the trajectory of that career where you want to go in life? Whether it's the number of hours that you work, the type of environment that you're in, does it have travel? All those things are important. Yeah.
Typically, what we've seen for people who are older, career change, college, redirection can be much more difficult because very typically, if you're married, you have children, it's hard to go, oh yeah, I'm going to now go to school full time, or I'm going to go to school for 15 years to get a degree now because that's all the time I have to get a degree. So the cost is significantly higher from a time and family. So it's much easier when you're younger and, you know, expenses are lower. If you're not married or children, or if you have very little children, it's easier to make those changes and those sacrifices for a short time of life. But that can get hard as time goes on.
Yeah. So. And I've said it, I will reemphasize it. Really try to find out real information. Use data to support decisioning. Because I have known people who weren't happy in their career. They went back to get a master's degree, thinking that getting a master's degree was going to automatically jump their salary $20,000 or whatever it might be. Got the master's, so spent money and multiple years getting the master's degree. Got the master's degree and couldn't get a job and couldn't get a good paying job. Ended up, you know, essentially in the same job. So, you know, degrees, certifications don't necessarily guarantee career success. So making sure that you really understand, like an MBA, there is a good and valuable reason to get an MBA, but there are just as many invalid, non-legitimate reasons for getting an MBA. So whether it's an MBA, another master's degree, a doctorate, a certification like a CPA, understanding, really understanding what those mean and what doors those will open, and not making assumptions that if I get an MBA or if I get my CPA, all of a sudden all the doors are going to open, because that's not how the world works. So again, understand, talk to the people who have those, and use data to support those decisions. Don't just think that something is going to automatically, magically open doors for you, because it doesn't always work that way.
One more question.
Do you have any recommendations for planning ahead for like high impact jobs? So if you imagine somebody that's a construction worker at 20 wants to do that their whole life, they got to imagine, okay, I can't be hammering nails at 60. Or for me, like, I've got the mental version of that where I'm like, can I really cut this mentally at 60? Do you have any recommendations for planning ahead or how to think through that in terms of long-term planning? Can I cut it with my brain? Or is it going to poop out on me? How do I make some backup plans?
That's right. Yeah.
Any thoughts on just what's wise for this stage for wise alternate plans?
Yeah. I can help you with that one.
You have kids.
Yeah. There is a reality as you age. I'm 62. You lose energy, you know, over time. So a very demanding, you know, demanding roles are taxing. Cybersecurity is easy, right? It's just... no threats. It's just like playing game video games, just making, watching your consoles, and yeah, that's right. Yeah, that is a reality, and part of it is planning, preparing, and recognizing that hey, is this sustainable? Is preparing financially for that, because with high intense jobs comes good compensation, but then you can build your lifestyle around that and get to that point where there's no option but to continue with that career, that role. So I think that's definitely a reality of how you're preparing in advance for, you know, plus two, to say, you know, is this, it's not only just the mental, but do you want to devote more to ministry, to your family, to whatever God is putting on your heart? That's very real. That's a time and energy thing as well. So,
yeah, I would agree. I think half the battle is understanding and accepting the fact that you may not be able to do this role forever. While cybersecurity is really easy, the average lifespan of a CISO in the role that I'm in is less than 2 years. So there's a lot of churn because it's a very high demand. Luckily, I'm a pretty chill person, so I have been able to survive so far in this role that I'm in now double the normal lifespan. But the reality is it is a high demand. It is a high demand job, and you know, I also know and Jen asks me about this all the time. Like, I'm one significant data breach from potentially being out the door, because if it happens, even if it's not my fault, even if it was an error made by somebody in, you know, in the engineering group that's run by somebody else, in my role, it falls on my shoulders. So I understand that. And being the CISO that was at the bank when they got hacked by, you know, somebody, not really longevity career, doesn't look good on the resume. So I understand that reality. And I think for me, practically speaking, part of why I don't worry about that, once God's sovereignty, is I know he'll take care of me. But then secondly, I have been trying to prepare myself, building a network, not burning bridges at old companies that I work for, maintaining my connections with other people. So if something does happen, I've worked with a lot of people in the industry that know me as a person. So even if we were to get breached and I get fired, I know that there are people that know who I am and how I work and how I function that would be willing to consider. I may not get the same type of job, but I've tried to build that framework underneath that would allow me to find something else. So I think that comes back to putting in that legwork and being diligent with your career, building a network, doing some of the practical things that helps you in your career, so that if something bad does happen, if you either you burn out or you can't hammer nails anymore or you get breached and you're looking for work, that you've kind of laid some of those foundations that will help in that case.
Probably the last part of that, I'm on the tech side working with guys like him, and I know the intensity of, what we both do. Part of it, too, is recognizing that, but you do have to plan ahead. It is going to definitely be, because where Toby mentioned earlier, sometimes our identity can be so wrapped up, we can't let go. So we refuse to plan ahead because it's like, well, I couldn't imagine this being the case where I don't have that title or that role or that responsibility anymore. And you're like, whoa, I guess my identity is wrapped up too tight in what I do and my income and my expenses, all those things. So those are very conscious decisions that, we as believers need to always wrestle through and be aware of and have very transparent with either our spouse or others to just go, hey, here's my heart. I need to be careful because trajectories are usually not big most of the time. They're 1 degree at a time. Well, 15 degrees at 2,000 miles later, hours later, you're way off course. And that's where I think these small decisions of financial decisions early on can have life impacts, and they're hard to error correct. And so just always encouragement. It's better to catch those as early as possible and keep monitoring them because our hearts can lead us astray at any time. So just a continuous vigilance. Have people that you can speak openly with all the time. I think FBC is, we try to make a church that way that, that you could, have people in your life and we just help each other on this path. It's we got to run this marathon and we want to run it faithfully. We want to finish the race and hear, well done, good and faithful servant, and not just, oh, you made a lot of money and you burned your, all the family and everything else up. So it's not what we want to do. So, all right. Time for cheesecake. You want to close in prayer?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Dear God, we are just so thankful that you are a God that loves us, that is faithful to us, and that is sovereign, that we can rest in that and find joy in the fact that while we have been called to be providers and to live life in a way that shows love to those around us, we know that ultimately you are in control of all things, the big things and the small things in our life, whether it's career or what we eat, what we drink, where we go. We know that nothing happens outside of your will. And we are just humbled by the opportunity to have a relationship with you through Christ's death on the cross. We just ask that it would be a genuine desire of ours to be workers and to be people in this world that are reflecting your love to those around us by the way that we act, whether it's at work or outside of work. Help us to live with eternal purposes in our mind, that we would see the people around us, including our coworkers and those within a career, as opportunities to share the joy and hope that we have from the gospel. Help us to genuinely seek to find ways to be able to just show people your love as well as speak the gospel to those around us, and help our careers to not be something that we see as different from that calling. I thank you for everybody who is willing to come today. Give us all wisdom as we look to honor you in the decisions that we make in our everyday life. We thank you and we help. I ask that you take everybody out from here and keep us all healthy and safe. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to this audio from Faith Bible Church. Feel free to share. Visit us online at fbchurch.org for more sermons, articles, and other resources, as well as information about our ministries.